We come to grow in our faith and discipleship. We come to worship. That's why we are here. And today we're going to talk about serving. We come to serve. And we come to one household. We come to find places to serve and to do what God would have us to do. John Wesley said, to do all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as ever you can. Y'all have that? I'll repeat that. But then we're supposed to do good all the time. That should be, you know, well, yeah, those people, the church, man, they really do good stuff. Now, do you know the church that has ever had that reputation? If it wasn't for that church, our community wouldn't even exist. We're supposed to be known not only by our love, but by our good works. Because our good works ought to come out of our love. Maybe that's the reason why we don't really do good works. It's because we just don't love as we should. And I admit, you know, it's hard to love. I mean, it's hard to love each other sometimes. Because when we really love each other, we have to forgive each other. We have to make allowances, as Paul says, for other people's, or for everybody's mistakes. Just as they, you know, have to put up with me. And it's hard to do that. And we must pray that God would give us that love. That it would be genuine. That we would really love. But you see, service, or our serving, ought to be a natural response. A natural response because of the gift God has given to us. Because of what God has done for us, in us, and through us. It ought to just be a natural thing. Because of what God's done for me, that I'm going to give back. Because what He's done for me is a gift. I do not deserve it. I cannot earn it. And so I ought to pass that gift along. We do not deserve what God has given to us. I think, though, that when we fail to serve, when we do not serve, that is an unconscious sign of us saying, I deserve God's salvation. I deserve God's salvation. Why should I give it to anybody else? They can get it just like I have. When they straighten up and drive up, then God will give it to them. Now, we don't think that. We would never verbalize that. And we may not even know that that's where the lack of motivation comes from. And it comes back around to a pride thing, which is what we talked about when we talked about prayer, discipleship, and worship. It's about our will. It's also, I think, that we've come to a place in our lives, and we've come to a place in our country, in Christianity, is that, well, you know, my faith is a private matter, and I'm not going to push my faith on anybody else, and I don't want them to push their faith on me. It's just a real private thing. And, you know, it's just Jesus and me. Jesus and me, we're okay. And I tell you, you can justify a lot of the bad things that you do in your life. If it's just you and Jesus. But Jesus never intended it to be just he and I. You know, he and me, or he and you. Or it's supposed to be Jesus and us. That's why it's called a community of faith. Why it's called the body of Christ, there are many parts, but one body. We're in this thing together. Even Jesus couldn't do it on his own. He told everybody, he said, listen, he said, the works that I do, they're not mine. I'm just doing what I say my Father's doing. But even before that, in Mark 3, he said, he called those that he wanted to be with him. He called the disciples, not first of all to preach, not to cast out demons, not to heal, not to, you know, to pass out, you know, bread and fish. He called them to be with himself. And if Jesus needed at least 12 to be with him, what does that say for you and I? Now, we know that there were more than 12, because when after the kind of the whole Judas debacle, and they had to pick another disciple, they said, let us remember to choose one who has been with us from the beginning. So, you know, there are obviously more than just the 12. So Jesus gathered around himself a community because he could not do it alone. And if he couldn't do it alone, you or I cannot do it alone. We were never intended to. We were never intended to do this thing alone. As the poet said, you know, no man is an island. And we're just not to be alone. But we've made it that way. And I think that the reason we do that is because if it's a private faith, then I don't have to be accountable to anybody else. And nobody, you know, has to know my demons. And nobody has to know that, you know, that, or we think that nobody has to know that sin would so easily beset us. But I got news for you. Everybody's wearing the illusion. And what you think is private is probably not their private. It's kind of like having a bad breath and nobody can tell it. Everybody knows it, but they're too embarrassed to tell it. So we're not intended to be alone. We're intended to work together. And to serve each other and to serve the world. And our model for that is taken from John 13 chapter. You don't understand now what I'm doing, but one day you will. No, Peter answered. He said, you shall never wash my feet. But if I don't wash you, you won't believe them all to me, said Jesus. And Peter replied, and wash my hands and my head as well, not just my feet. And Jesus replied, a person who is bathed all over does not need to wash except for to be entirely. Do you understand what I was doing? You called me teacher and Lord, and you were right because it was true. And since I, the Lord and the teacher, have washed your feet, you ought to wash each other's feet. I have given you an example. Do as I have done to you. Now, truth is that the servant is not greater than the master, nor are messengers more important than the one who sends them. You know these things, now do them. That is the path of blessing. Jesus stooped to wash his disciples' feet. The creator of the universe, the Son of God, the second person of the Trinity, the one who has always existed, to wash our feet. Humble himself. And Jesus says, if I do this, I'm your master, then you ought to do this for each other. And to do it for the world. That we ought to serve each other. We ought to humble ourselves and serve each other. Now, you've heard we talk about our strategic plan, and you've heard about, we've said, you know, we want to change the culture of the church. And some people have said, well, what does that mean? Well, one of the things that it means is that we are going to be shifting from a culture of volunteerism to a church of serving. I'm not going to ask you to volunteer for anything else. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to do everything. No, I'm going to ask you to serve. You see, a volunteer can pick and choose their assignments. They can choose when they want to do it. Many times they can choose how they want to do it. And if they get to a point and they decide they don't like it anymore, they can stop doing it. Because they're just a volunteer. But it doesn't work that way to service, does it? If you're a servant, you don't necessarily get to pick the time. You don't necessarily get to pick when you do it. You don't get to choose how you're doing it either. So we know what we're not volunteers. We ought to be servants. That we want to serve other people. That we serve each other. We serve Christ and His church. A servant has no choice. Now, obviously, you know, we do have choices. But really, we should live like we don't. If someone was, you know, a servant of a master, they don't have a choice. We have a master, and we are his servants. But we sometimes, we're just trying to treat Christ as our buddy, and we can just do whatever we want, and it's going to be okay. So we want to change the culture from volunteers to servants. And so if I sometimes say, well, can I have any volunteers? Correct me. Okay. Nicely. Because we are supposed to be servants. We live in very difficult times. We live in very different times, but we also live in very it's just a very interesting world we live in today. And that's especially true in the church. Today, as we remember 9/11, and I remember when that happened, and remember that we opened the doors to the church, for people to come in and pray. And I found that very strange that there were very few people that were in prayer. Many times it was Kelly and I, and maybe one or two other great people. And statistics, they've done studies about this statistics that, you know, that after 9/11, you know, attendance in churches went up. But then about 6 months after 9/11, church attendance went down below the level it was before 9/11. It's really odd. We just live in strange times. And I've not talked to a preacher where their attendance has not been just all over the board in love. And I'm not saying there's not, but that's more than normal. So we're living strange times today. But one of the strange things about this is that the people who are under 35, there's kind of this revolution going on of service. Of wanting to do something, wanting to be involved, wanting to make a difference, wanting to get out of the community, get their hands there. They don't care necessarily to come to a Bible study and visit it, you know, and to come and be in church, but they want to go out and do something that will help other people. Now, some of that is a direct result of the culture that they live in, that everybody, you know, there's still kind of this, you know, bread to get out of the kingdom. And there's a lot of people in our society whose kids, who are in their 20s and 30s, see that and they go, well, I don't want any of that. Because I'm miserable, and even though my parents have a lot, they're miserable too. Now, they might not think that, verbalize it, but I think that that's where the root is. There's this revolution going on of service. And I know on October 22nd, if you Saturday, there are going to be things that you can do. We're doing Impact JC again, where the churches are getting together to help do community projects to make a difference in our community. something beyond ourselves. And again, you've heard me say it before, we ought to be the kind of church that if we disappear, the community will fall apart. When I was growing up, I went to Waukesha United Methodist Church. I was in my 20s before I could sell that. But it was a Cherokee name, at Waukesha United Methodist Church. When in the early 70s, they were averaging 200 people on Sunday nights. Now, Lookout Valley is not a big place. They had one high school of maybe 475, 500 students. I think two red lights. They didn't have post office. There were 200 people coming to that church on Sunday night. Or about 300 on Sunday morning. And their building was about a third of the size of this. But you know what I remember as great as that church was? You know, looking back on that, I think now, I do not ever remember a single event other than a revival. But I don't remember a single event where that church went out and did anything in the community. Which probably is a direct result of why there's about 60 in their church today. And man, they, you talk about location, location, location. I mean, this church sits right on the forum that everybody in Tiftonia passes at least once or every other week because there's a Walmart just past it, 300 yards. It's a beautiful building. Laminated arches, you know, and just beautiful building, beautiful facilities. But they forgot how to go out into the community. They forgot how the only United Methodist Church in the Valley, the only one. Now, the preacher of that church knew every drunk within 5 miles of the church. And he ministered to them, and nobody else did. But today, we have people, young people are coming to church that I want to do something. I want to go. So what church broke people were telling us is to do things where you can get people involved in service. And then they get to know you and find out you know who Christians are. Really, complete weirdos. Not complete weirdos. If they get to know us, if they can see that we like each other, and that we can like them, that we love them, and we accept them. But we've got to be willing to serve. See, we've gone through several generations and have forgotten how to do that. We've forgotten how to do it. And that's so very sad for us because as United Methodists, that's who we are. When John Wesley began the Methodist movement, he went to all the people that the Anglican Church has forgotten. Those who were poor, those who were down and out. And in England, in the 1700s, you either had or had not. There wasn't much of a road. And so he opened schools, had continuing education, you know, teaching people to read. He had jobs training. He had medical dispensaries. He had bookstores. He had job training. Just all these types of things to help people not become Christian, but to enrich their lives and to lift them up and to lift their whole society. But at the same time, they presented the gospel. So we get all these social work things that we have relegated, unfortunately, to the government when it's not their job. The government can't fix our problems. On the cross. It's all the problem. But that shouldn't really be a surprise either about the service because the first 200 years of the church was poor. They had no money. But how did they spread the news? They tell people and they serve people. An emperor of Rome, in one of his letters to a friend, said, "You know, the Christians in Rome shame the Romans because they are better to our citizens who are in need than we are." So, you know, I mean, some people say, "Well, if we have more money, we can take money." But we didn't have to buy them. We do have to love. It's very interesting as I was thinking about this week, and then thinking about this in the context of all that we've been talking about for the past weeks. It's so very interesting how we've only talked about one thing. Yes, we've talked about prayer, we've talked about discipleship, we've talked about worship, we're talking about service today, but we've really talked about one thing. And that's our will versus God. You remember when Jacob wrestled with God? And God is saying, "Jacob, who's going to be in control of your life? Who are you?" And it's a battle of wills, and we talked about it. When we talked about discipleship, if you want to be my follower, if you want to be my disciple, you must deny yourself, take up your cross, follow me. It's about our will. Who's going to win? Is it going to be God? Is it going to be us? And we're talking about worship. Isaiah saw the Lord. He was high and lifted up. Then we are nothing compared to God. We are nothing in light of His goodness. But He wants to come and He wants to cleanse us and make us new. It's all about our will. Service. See, it's so hard. It's easier to volunteer because, see, if I volunteer and it gets too hard, I go back. Or I don't have to do it either. But when I serve, that means it's going to interrupt my time. It might even interrupt my sleep. It might interrupt those things that I want to do. But it'll mess up my schedule. You hear the personal pronoun about that? Well, that's the problem. I'm in the servants don't think about the schedule. They don't think about the time. They don't think about whether it's convenient or not. I'm afraid that sometimes we even got to the place that we will not serve other people. Because we say yes to a lot of great things. And we excuse that. We excuse service. Say, "Well, this is good." But we replace God's best with what's good. I know that, you know, this is, you know, kind of going in the middle a little bit, but sometimes, you know, it's okay to say no to your kids in order to do something for God. It's okay to say no to your kids, you know, because we've got to do X, Y, or Z, or whatever, or your grandparents. Why we serve holy is because of the cross. Because the Son of God gave His life for us. And we ought to give our lives to others. That's why we serve. And in the midst of our service, when things aren't easy, when people are complaining, when other people aren't doing it, pulling their weight, when we think we've got it all figured out, they're not listening to us, and we've got to remember that Jesus died on the cross. He died to Himself, and we died to ourselves as well. That we ought to. He calls us. So today, when we remember one of the darkest days in our country's time,